So they've imprisoned a child.
I stole the baby!
God. Oh, I forgot Willow. But I liked the brownies. I liked the brownies. They had a good reason. They were bringing it to that witch in the woods. Wow, that sounds wrong.
Show up to take the dinos.
Yeah, evil scientist and the mom gets tranked.
Yeah, I said trank mom, kill dad.
I dubbed him Datasaur. Mm-hmm. But it's useless after this page of notes because the dude dies.
Hey, Naomi.
Yeah.
That dad dead though.
Yeah, but I didn't make that joke until the last page of my notes. Sorry, we're close. Kind of. No, we're not. There's like five pages of notes.
It seems like there's a lot more movie because we just got introduced to the dinosaurs.
So this is where the movie should have really started.
Yeah.
Instead of all this buildup. And though, I mean, I mean, like, they have some very interesting characters. I like the scene with the, sequestered native tribe, with the food exchange and the Polaroid. And then
it's humanizing. Mm-hmm. It really lets us connect with them, especially spoilers. They come back later.
Yeah.
Okay, so they have the baby because they're swimming with the baby. The mom gets tranked. The dad comes in and dies.
Right.
And then mayhem breaks out because Gory runs out there to be like, hey, what are you doing? Well, she holds the baby back, right? And then they're like, oh, no. And then they start shooting. And then just pandemonium goes out.
Okay, so this is the exact sequence of it.
Oh, do it.
Gory comes out and he's, you know, like, oh, Eric, are you a scientist or a profiteer? Blah, blah, blah.
He's an evil scientist. It's kind of both.
And then they kind of, one of the army guys knocks him out. And then they're like, is he your prisoner? And a professor says, we don't take prisoners. And he's about to shoot him. And then Susan's just like, no. And then she rushes out there. And then the guy who's about to shoot George like raises the gun to her, and then he gets it in the neck.
He gets an arrow in the neck from the indigenous tribe that ditched them.
Yeah, and so that's when mayhem breaks out, and they're shooting all over.
Yeah.
And
Yakety Stacks starts playing, and they're like, yeah, that how it feels like? Because no one runs in any; they all run scattered in every direction, like. Most of the natives go back into the forest, right? But then, like, the guys on the beach, including Niles and evil scientists, are, like, back and forth and all around, and they're shooting. And the guys with guns, the militia guys, are like, oh, yeah, we did it, right? And then you cut to the guys in the woods, and they're like, ha-ha, f*** you.
Right, and then George and Susan make the escape with the baby,
right.
But it's enough of a distraction to get them away, which is, you know, the fush important part. The army is still there, and the colonel is like, so do you want to set up camp here? And the professor is just sort of like, no, we're going to have to take her back with us. And they are basically going to take the mom onto the barge and drift her upriver or downriver.
We do have a heartrending scene where, like, the dad flops around in the water and, like, gets his head up out of the water to like die next to her, and I feel like she would think that she was dying because she's been tranked,
right? But it is a very effective scene with their heads next to each other.
It's very Land Before Time-ish.
It's very Disney.
Yeah, I was like, oh great, dead parent trope, great, love it. Oh, shout out to the vultures that are laying on the dad like a minute later when the baby comes to investigate.
Yeah, after they get the baby, after they get the mom on the barge and they're drifting away, that's when the baby comes back to see his dead dad.
And he cries tears. Animals don't cry emotional tears. They do scream. They do cry out. They do like lean in and like try to get physical comfort. But in terms of like weeping animals, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I like the idea of them being like our parrot, Yoda, baby Yoda. He was baby Yoda in like 2002, so I win that. But he had, parrots do what's called eye pinning, which if you're not familiar with it, looks very much reptilian, except their pupils are round. And so it dilates like you'd think a serpent I would and like a cat's would, but it just spirals in and out of it. Irises in and out, right? And they can control it. And that's what I think. I mean, if I had to guess, that's what I guess a dinosaur has.
So are you saying that all of the dinosaurs turn to birds?
A little bit. That's where the science breaks down for me.
Well, speaking of birds, the vultures shown picking at the dead dinosaur and sunning themselves are American turkey vultures.
That's not indigenous to Africa.
Cathartes aura is their scientific name.
I do love me a vulture, though. And you know why? The Jungle Book.
Oh, yeah, the Disney one.
Uh-huh, cartoon one.
Yeah, they're like, what is it? They're like,
I don't know what you want to do. Yeah. I don't know what you want to do. I was like, they're amazing. And then I'd read facts about them, and I'm like, yeah, vultures are so metal. You can puke up to 20 feet, and you shit on your feet if they're too hot. Yeah. That bird is so metal.
Also, I liked it because it reminded me of the Beatles.
Yeah. I think originally they were going to be the Beatles, mm-hmm. but I think they backed out for some reason.
Buzzy, Flaps, Ziggy, and Dizzy are minor characters in 1967's Jungle Book.
Flip-flop, nim-nom, and dip-dip.
They appear to be a parody of the Beatles.
Yeah, that's what makes them mm-hmm. awesome.
Yeah. So baby shows up to dad's corpse, camp destroyed.
And now they steal the baby.
Susan specifically says, you know, if we get the baby back there, we can beat Eric.
He will be my discovery. She officially solidifies herself as an evil scientist because she's all like, oh, yeah, no, I'm going to steal the baby and he'll be my discovery. She might as well like lick her fingers and slick her eyebrows back. I was like, you were so good until then. But now, OK, so we've just watched this baby's dad die. We've just seen it literally weep tears over its father's death. Right. You know what we should do now?
We should humiliate the baby even further.
Let's get his head stuck in a bucket trying to eat something because he's probably starving.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's get his head stuck in some underwear.
Some dirty underwear.
And then let's have him fight a monkey. Why the f*** not?
See, I saw the monkey helping him because the monkey got the underwear off his head.
I think that's possible. But also, it's a stupid comedic beat at a very bad place.
Do you know the worst part of this baby's bad day?
It wasn't the dad dying or being stuck in dirty underwear.
I mean, like the dad dying and the mom being taken away. But it was also the fact that it was trapped by the sounds of its mom.
Yes. Okay. So the baby gets out of the. Okay. Oh, I call this the dirty trick to catch the baby. They take a speaker and they found that an audio recording they made had survived. And so they place it on top of the mumbo fruit. It doesn't matter. It's fruit with an African name I'm not familiar with. I don't remember what it's called. But it's just a tree fruit. It's apparently everywhere, but too high for the baby to get to. So the baby is actively starving to death. And then they throw it on like a tarp and lead it into their overly comedically oversized tent. Like we've discussed tents before. Please reference our Killer Clowns from Outer Space and their comedically large tent. They trick the baby into the tent and then he runs in after it to put a collar on it made out of her belt. And then yakety sax ensues because the baby runs with a tent on it through a river, nearly drowning him, which would have also been a good point to end the movie.
Okay, but like it's sad yakety sax. So instead of it being like ba 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 ba, it's more like ba 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 ba.
Yeah. Like in Walking Dead, when they take like a good or any Batman film where they take like a good like not it's a good song, but then they like slow it down, you know, like. Yeah, like the memes where it's just like, instead of like, hello, darkness, my old friend, it's like, hello, darkness, my old friend.
Right. It's really sad to see this whole string of like, awful thing happen, and then awful thing happen, and then maybe this baby gets hope, and then it's not hope. It's just a f***ing recording.
The baby panics, lodges its head between two trees, and then ceramic evil scientist bag. Goes in and is just like, it's me, pets him with the, like, I don't know if you've been smothered by a blanket and then petted on the face. I haven't. I hope to never do that. But she, like, brings it up and she's like, look, it's just me, right? I was really glad when dude was in the tent with him and he's like, ow, it bit me. And I was like, good, bite him again. I hope he chokes on it. Man, I'm madder than I thought about this movie. So they've imprisoned a child.
I stole the baby!
Oh, I forgot Willow, but I like the brownies. They had a good reason. They were bringing it to that witch in the woods. Wow, that sounds wrong.
Okay, one thing, the brownies stealing the baby is legitimately hilarious. This is not hilarious. This is just awful on top of awful on top of awful.
Yeah, this isn't just cruel. It's cruel, cruel. It's terrible.
Yeah.
See, it's me. What reason? What have you done to make this baby trust you? Name one thing. You can't say it's giving food because you just ruined that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't say like you've bonded with it, you petted it, and then tagged it so you could find it later.
Yeah.
Like you've done nothing kind to this animal.
But we have to move on because we could get stuck on this for hours.
It's true. Instead, the mom stirs on a barge. They trank her again and she almost drowns.
And Nigel is like, we have to save her. And he actually, like, to Nigel's credit, he jumps in and tries to, like, he jumps into the water to try and get her head out of the water. Yeah. And he's legitimately trying to save her. And this is, like, Nigel is the only person in this movie who I would say has a character arc.
I don't know. Does he end up being good at the end? Or does he just, I mean, like, I don't know.
Well, we don't see him do anything that is specifically good, but he's the one who kind of has a bit of a revelation later on.
Okay, I'll take it. Because we see other characters go down a darker path. Evil scientist is sitting next to Lieutenant Jerk, and he's like, yes, in the future, you're going to be, I've got connections, and you will be, I can't wait to call you Colonel or something like that, right?
Well, he's already a colonel. I think he says you're going to be a general.
Oh, yeah, whatever. He's promising fame and riches beyond. So now this guy has gone from being like a hired hand militia type to being like he's got dollar signs. He sees power. That's where his character shifts. Like he evil scientist thinks he's making him more loyal to him. But what he is saying to himself, his internal monologue appears to be, oh, yes, this is how I shall rule the day. Everybody's power seeking.
Mm-hmm. Not the baby, not the mom. They're just trying to live their life.
Yeah, they're trying to live. Full stop. Oh, okay. But also the lieutenant,
Colonel.
The colonel. He goes, you lose one, you keep one. That's fair in my book, right? Oh, and we also go to a scene where they're bedding down in their tent for the night and the baby's outside and the evil scientist lady tries to feed baby a piece of fruit, and Gory is like, oh, she already ate 200 pounds of fruit today. And she's like, oh, well, then I guess you're not hungry. And my notes are like, the baby is sad, not hungry, not sick, like devastated. And I don't anthropomorphize animals so greatly that I don't eat them, but like I do feel like you have to take into context, like, emotionally. You should not terrorize an animal. And this baby is, like, actively, currently suffering trauma. And you're like, oh, do you want an apple? Would that help? No? And then the baby climbs in the tent with them, and it's supposed to be, like, a whole wholesome moment. But the least you can do is cuddle her, or him, or them. Like, the least you could do.
Right. But then hijinks ensue later on. And
my notes are like, yay, wasps!
The real heroes of this movie.
They're doing God's work as far as I'm concerned. Oh, okay. So he does, like, he's getting fruit and he gets stung by wasps. And now probably the most improbable part of the film for me is, like, she's applying mud to him, right? Like magical wasp mud. And then he's just like, yeah, yeah, let's bone. He doesn't say it like that, but that's how I'm like wasps to boning.
Yeah, like essentially she's taking care of him, and because he only sees her in a frame of reference that ultimately surrounds him in some capacity, he gets turned on by her caregiving. I mean, I don't know if he would get turned on by taking care of her. Doesn't seem like the kind of guy.
But she's blowing on him and he's just like, baby's wandering around. He says the line, come here and plant one on me.
And then the baby does.
Yeah, like they lay down together and apparently the baby sticks its tongue in his face. You.
Yeah. Oh, and this is the part where she has her bra undone and, you know, like it's very close to being a booby shot.
Yeah, but it never shows up. They shoo the baby away. They bang. And then they come back to them later, like with her like redoing her hair with her shirt on. And she's staring at him with the not f*** me eyes, but we done just f*** eyes. And then...
Then she's like, where did the baby go? Yeah. The baby ran away from you. I would run away from you, too.
My notes go, these are the dumbest scientists on the entire planet. He wants four kids, and they lost the baby. the huge baby, the 10-foot-long baby. They lost a baby.
And then people wonder why millennials are so screwed up. Look at their parents.
My God. So they now come across evil scientists, and they attempt the worst rescue I've ever seen. Their plan is just crouch real low and cut the dinosaur free, who's like obviously very knocked out. And then ... money? Like, do you remember that trip that from South Park where the underwear elves, underpants elves are just like, first we steal the underpants, then ? Then money. That's what it feels like. It's not a funny way to describe it, but it's exactly their plan, because there is no plan. It's like me stealing fries off of Jen's plate. There's no real plan. Jen can just say no. Like, turn around and be like, get your hands off of that. Right? Like, they're like, let me French fry steal this entire dinosaur.
So is at this point, they try and get the mom free. They get captured. I believe Professor Eric says, no, we still need them. And then, like, later...
They get sequestered into, I keep using the word sequestered, they get put into their prison tent.
Right. And then the professor says, I've read your notes, Susan, and it looks like there's a hatchling out there. And then they kind of make a deal with him to...
They don't really make a deal with him. Apparently he's gleaned enough from her notes to be able to do something. But he does lean in all sinister and say, you're going to help me, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, no. Why? What on God's green earth makes you think that they're going to try to help you? What of anything? They are currently your prisoners.
Right. And then after they get through with Gory and Susan in the tent, that's when Nigel kind of has his like turning around point.
Yeah.
Where he's like, he informs Eric that the mom is dying. And he's like, oh, the colonel wants to go ahead and fly her up. And if he does that, she's going to die. And yeah. So he's like, he's second guessing himself. And he's like, are we the baddies?
Yeah, he basically says, are we the bad guys? Except he goes super high, well, I perceived high pitch, but he goes, oh, Eric, what are we going to do? Yeah, I'm like, oh, honey, oh, no.
That's why I think these two are coded.
Yeah, I mean, if you saw them hug, you would not be surprised. And instead of calling him professor or whatever title, like honorific, he calls him Eric. I don't know.
Nigel is played by Julian Fellowes, born on August 17, 1949 in Cairo, Egypt. He's best known as a writer and producer for Gosford Park, Downton Abbey, and From Time to Time.
He's a very fancy man. I'm sorry if that makes him gayer to me, but I mean no disrespect. Like, his gayness is not what makes him a terrible character. He's not even a bad, like, I don't hate him so much. He's an underling doing underling things. And whereas I don't think that excuses your behavior, I get it, you know? Okay, so.
Then later that night, Eric kills the colonel.
He kills his own militia guy.
Yeah, well, he kills the guy in charge. And then he also frames George and Susan. Because the next morning they get thrown out by one of the men and says, oh, the colonel got killed and this was in their tent. And I was like, they didn't have anything on him. Never mind.
Okay, yeah. Well, how did they get their bags or whatever? But they're like, bag scientist is like, oh, the CIA. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Everyone to the helicopter.
Well, he's like, yeah, they have gold somewhere. And so they, Eric is using the military guys to track the baby. And he still play for whatever reason. He's still like, yeah, we need these people, which I don't think they actually do.
No, because they've got the notes and the tracker. They literally do not need them anymore. But how could we not get into the helicopter and then cut to baby interacting with the tortoise?
Oh, the baby's all like, are you my mom?
And the tortoise is like, the f-? Because it like into its shell. It like, I'm like, wait, okay, so this might not be Milo and Otis, and they only killed like one human and 30-some plus animals, but they scared the fuck out of that tortoise. The toucans I've seen, the vultures, they all seemed chill. They were very cool. The monkey didn't seem particularly perturbed, right? But that tortoise was like, no, right now, fuck you. You're not even a proper reptile. Anyways, so they're tracking them via helicopter and they're waiting for this machine to beep, right? And I'm sure it kind of reminds me, I know it's not the same, but the beeping reminds me of a metal detector, in that as the closer you are, the stronger the beeping gets. So they hear beep and they're like, right? And then so they start circling or whatever. And so beep, beep, beep. Okay. But they go, they see the baby. And the malicious guy's mad because he's interpreted the treasure as gold.
Well, he was specifically told gold.
Okay. And he's like, is that your treasure? Right? And he's like, well, yeah. I'm an evil scientist. Right? And so they go to Trank the baby. And everyone's not paying attention to Gory, who then kicks the guy. Right? So head militia guy's dead, right? So second in charge gets kicked out of the helicopter, except he swings long out of it and goes, as he like falls like spread eagle.
It's like the longest fall. Like obviously he's on a cable or something.
No, it looks kind of real because well, later on they do jump out of an airplane, but it looks almost like they slowed it down.
You can imagine a Wilhelm scream there, but it isn't.
I often mix up the Wilhelm scream with this other one that I often claim I hear. Okay, so they, having caused, oh, and I think that like the driver gets stabbed or something. He's got blood on him.
Yeah, there's a there's a struggle in the helicopter, and someone like fires a gun and it shoots the pilot, and then that brings the helicopter down low enough for them to jump in the water.
Right, they jump no tethers into the water. That's why I think that they probably didn't use cables. It doesn't feel like there's a lot of cables supported jumping in this, like lots of springboards, stuff like that, but it doesn't seem like the pulley system of certain other dramatic. Oh, so convenient cave is convenient.
They get the baby, they lead the baby into this convenient cave, and then there's a cave chase that ends.
Okay, I know we have to cut through a lot, but Gory goes, I'll make a torch. He's just been in a river, he's drenched head to toe, he doesn't appear to be a smoker. How is he making a torch? And then they come into the cave, and then they make torches too. Except where did they land the helicopter? How did they make their own torches? What is going on? Why aren't there flashlights on the helicopter? And that's where the science breaks down for me. Sorry.
But this cave chase ultimately leads to dramatic cliff dive, which before they actually dive in there, Gory does this really weak of catch this, and he throws their torch at him.
The bats come out of them and she's like, oh, they're in my hair. But anybody who knows anything about bats knows they don't get lodged in your hair. That makes me mad. That's a stereotype, and stop bad mouthing bats. Okay.
Didn't we make a fugitive reference when we were watching this scene?
My notes do say the fugitive. Did you notice that they don't all just leap off? Those two actively push the baby off a cliff and then jump into unknown waters. You don't dive anywhere you don't know the bottom of. It would have been safer if they'd gone back. But instead, they almost drowned by going through an underwater. Says underwater cave systems can be miles and miles and miles long, and they just hold their breath and expect the baby to hold its breath.
They had a scene like this in 13th Warrior. I wonder if Maddie just likes long cave swimming scenes.
Jen, I think you've solved it. Madeline, we'll talk about this. We'll circle back around. You'll. HR meeting. Bring your swim goggles and nose. All my notes say about that is those lucky. Except it's more like those lucky plot devices.
And then they get pooped out of a river. But here's the thing, like, it's completely unnecessary. This chase is completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, this is the thing. Like, it feels like it's just added in there. You know, it's just in there.
Right. But here's the thing, because they then take this long walk that feels like a National Geographic documentary. And then the baby suddenly sniffs something and the baby goes forward and the baby gets captured. So essentially,
it smells the mom and goes straight into the arms of the evil scientist.
Essentially, they didn't have to push the baby down into this dark cave and potentially kill the baby.
Literally would have been safer to be captured by the guys. Okay, so hey, you know what we should do?
A walk of despair?
Well, maybe, but how about we get some natives to come to the rescue? No problem! Which is Kenji's catchphrase.
Yeah, so they, at the end of this like long walk that they have, they like meet up with all of their allies that they've made along the way, and then the last 15 minutes of the film come down to this.
Hold on a sec. Nigel does. because the baby's captured, comes up to evil scientist Eric, and he goes, the poor thing's terrified. I gave her some morphine, right? And I'm like, I'm scared all the time. Where's my morphine?
But you know what Eric says? Splendid, just splendid. She's terrified. Splendid.
I think he was complimenting the morphine, but who's to say? You know what? You know what? The next last of the film goes pretty fast, and God bless it. You know what I mean?
Before we go into it, I want to say something that I said yesterday before I had ever seen the end of this film. And it was, this movie could be 1,000% better if the mom, who is an omnivore, turns into a carnivore in an effort to save her baby.
Yeah.
Do you remember me saying that last night?
No, but I probably copied you because later on I have a thing.
Yeah.
But that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind, because this movie ends in such a way.
So they set a fire, and I have to admit that fire is a better distraction than their not having any plan at all that they tried before.
Right, for trying to get the mom out. They could have very easily caused a distraction in the woods and then someone else go in to cut the rope. Anyways, we're thinking more than they thought. Not the point.
True.
Fire is a distraction, and then they're waiting for Kenji. Where's Kenji? We got to wait for Kenji.
But the guy, they have this one tribal member who has a very distinct facial painting where it covers his whole chin and kind of hourglass up under his eyes, almost like a really severe vase.
Yeah, that's a Sifu.
War paint on or whatever.
Yeah, and we see that same face paint or war paint on him at the scene where they get drunk and then get left behind.
Yeah, it must be very ceremonial, but also we know nothing. So they're like, wait. They're hidden like on the other side of some pallets, and he's on a deck of a shack. And then one of the militia guy comes out, and Sifu. Is that his name?
Sifu, yeah.
Sifu does a silent takedown that is so awkward that it is glorious. He's just kind of like, nyuk, chuck, tunk, 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 tunk. And like, he flips the guy. Okay. A lot of these native people are unnamed, right? Other than Sifu, right? But you have got to compliment the jumping, twisting, flipping, face punching, table flipping, all of it. Looks like they're having the time of their lives.
Agreed.
It's fantastic. It look like, you know, Jackie Chan in his prime when he's like doing like really great comedic bits as he's like doing the thing. He's like, oh, you know what? I'll take down this guy with a steering wheel. And he's like, blah, 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 right? You just imagine somebody was like, I need you to like flip over this table and hit the guy with it. And he's like, yeah, that sounds great. And like just does it like it's very novel. Okay, so now Kenji comes.
Sifu gets like a gun and they're trying to tell him to pull the trigger, and he pulls the trigger and he kind of likes it. There's a couple of guards stationed at this fenced area where the mom's at. And then Kenji comes, and what does he bring?
Molotov motherfucking cocktails.
From the sky.
Yeah. So they never say explicitly, but it must totally be the fuel from his plane.
More than likely.
Yeah. Okay, so here's where another scientific thing breaks down for me. Why are all these guys so willing to die? What has the people, these indigenous people who've come to their aid, what do they stand to gain? They have people dying left and right. Yeah, they're taking out militia guys, which is fantastic, right? They're pretty evil, but they seem like pretty good guys. And they're like, from my perspective, which could be very, very flawed, they are aiding the release of their most feared creature enough to make them disappear during the beer ayahuasca scene, right? The meanie creature that they hate has been locked up and is about to be taken away, and they never have to deal with it again. But instead, they come by the aid of these white people they've known for 2 days and let warrior after warrior from their tribe die.
There's not enough context in the movie to know exactly why they're doing this. And yeah, it does seem like they're kind of terrified of these beings.
Yeah. And there's no comeback from that. If you were deeply scared of vampires and I locked up Dracula and I was like, peace out, motherfucker, and I start taking him back to England, wouldn't you be like, yay, less Dracula's around, right? You wouldn't be like, you know what I'd like to do? I'm going to set Dracula free with the aid of this random whitey, you know, like.
Well, and this isn't the first time. Like, we see them stopping the white people from getting killed earlier.
I get compassion, right? I love compassion. But when it comes specifically to the lives of these animals, which they've eaten before, I don't, well, maybe not, well, them, it's the other tribe. But
like, yeah, I don't think that they're part of the other tribe that...
that ate them with the guy who's still sick.
Right.
Yeah, I don't, but they know of the creature.
Right, and they don't seem too happy when she shows the picture, not unless they see it as like, you know, maybe it's just like, you know, as soon as she shows the picture, they're like, okay, we're going to get out because we know that these are destructive animals. But maybe there's also a level of them that's like, you know, these are still animals in our culture. And, you know, they maybe they need to be there for some reason.
Yeah, I mean,
they keep the hippos away. Sorry, that's bad.
No, that's awesome. The interplay of different spirit animals in lots of different cultures is a very relevant point. And I
was just thinking from like, you know, like these are like the bigger animals and they scare away the hippos because of how big they are.
No, that's good. The interplay, the balance of nature. That's a valid point, Lydia. I like that a lot. They go to release Momosaur, right? And evil scientist Eric, he makes a getaway with the baby on the back of a truck.
Right. And George tries to go after him and fails miserably.
Yeah, he gets after him with a motorcycle with a...
Right. But before he gets the motorcycle, he gets onto the top of the car. And like,
he goes, tries to go through the window and he just uses his cane to like boof him out.
Yeah.
It was pretty good. But while he's driving away, you know what he does? Drives through a fruit stand. We just needed to fit like three or four more cliches into this film before it ends. But we, like that truck, are driving towards the end of this film as fast as we possibly can.
Right. And then the mom gets free and Susan's like, go get your baby.
Okay. So, and I'm sorry. Imagine your mother. We have all had loving mothers, right? Imagine your mother has been dosed with drugs for days, right? And then because you're in danger and she's been released and she's also the size of Godzilla, she comes raging towards you to save you, right? Imagine your mother, just take a moment, cracked out Momzilla is like, I'll save you, baby! Like, full Super Saiyan, like drugged up Super Saiyan. This Momosaur is f***ed up right now. There's no way. And the poor baby's on morphine, right? So the baby's like, Mom, is that you? I'm coming, baby! I just hurt my throat doing that. But you have to understand, neither of these animals feel safe. Both of them have been terribly abused and traumatized. And I think we're supposed to feel like, oh, she's doing it right now. But I feel like, oh, no, she's going to do it right now.
Right.
Okay.
like at this point, I was like, yeah, go ahead, Mom. Go ahead. Eat the guy. Become a carnivore.
Yeah.
You know, to save your baby.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense. But if you try really hard from their perspective, it's not a good situation for anyone.
Also, she does that whole thing like Spielberg had to have gotten some inspiration from this movie, unless he says otherwise, I'm just going to believe it. But like at one point, Eric's driving and then she comes up next to him and then she tries to get at him in the car. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it reminds me of objects in the mirror may appear closer than they really are from Jurassic Park.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Dr. Evil Lady and Gory are on a motorcycle and she uses the blunt end of an axe to like bash off the side mirror. Oh no, in the mirror, the windshield.
Yeah.
And that's not believable.
And then that causes a car crash.
Which does not kill the evil scientist, but is the baby dead? That's where my notes go. Is that baby dead though?
And like Eric looks sad, but it's like his character buildup at this point is like more sad that he doesn't have this discovery, less sad that a baby's dead.
Yeah, he looks like a high schooler whose letterman jacket just got taken a shit on, as
right.
opposed to someone who has lost like something they care about deeply, which the other two fake, I guess, later on.
Yeah.
Because, but Mom comes up and mind you, remind again, cracked out.
Yeah.
She's like, you know what I'm going to do right this second? And this is where you and I agree. I was like, opportunistic omnivore?
Maybe now she's a carnivore.
Yeah, she chomps him.
Oh, wait a minute. She's not an omnivore. She's probably an herbivore.
It's true.
I was saying omnivore earlier.
Oh,
I totally messed it up.
But lots of herbivores are opportunistic omnivores. So, so I've seen videos of deers, and I've talked about it before, but of deers like eating birds. You'll notice, I mean, like a cat will eat grass, but you'd still call a cat a carnivore, right? A dog will do either and needs both, and so is a true omnivore. You and I, because of our reliance on proteins, even though people choose to be vegan, and I'm not being mad at you could classify the majority of the human race as omnivores because we do both.
Right. It's just my secular cultural knowledge of brontosauruses is that they're herbivores. An herbivore turning into a carnivore is just like makes this movie 1,000% better than it did over at I Would Whip the...
Yeah. Yeah. This movie could do with a lot more brontosaurus eating people. maybe that's a lifestyle change she has.
My note is worst crane game ever.
Oh, okay. So only our two white hero protagonists can go take the bamboo cage off of the dead baby. But the mom comes over and nuzzles the baby, and that's when we find out the baby isn't dead. And I appreciate that detail because I didn't want them to do CPR or whatever and get even more of the glory, right? So the baby stands up, the mom and the baby, they're like, oh. And then Sarah?
Susan.
Dr. Evil says her last line of the film, and she goes, baby, you don't. And the baby walks off with its actual mother into its actual habitat to presumably be killed later. And then she and Gory kiss. And we go back to the river they're walking into. The baby, like, light splattering around it, is like, ah, which is probably its last brain cell dying because of the Western medicine it's been given.
Okay, so actually the last line of the film is where Gory is saying to her, secret... Or he says, like, legend, and she's like, only if we allow it to be.
Oh, right, because they've saved the day by not...
Well, by just keeping them, like, if dinosaurs were alive in our worlds, then, like, it would be a huge discovery.
Okay.
But what they're saying is, in order for these animals to flourish, we have to leave them alone, and so it's better for us not to say anything. And they do what Eric wouldn't have been able to do, which is not talk about this.
Like, walk away.
Right.
Okay, so we get an end scene. Fancy. Like, it's not a freeze frame, but they do end, like, at the end. Like, a flowery the end. But now that you've brought it up, let me headcanon out the rest of this for you.
Okay.
I'll keep it to 1 minute.
I would just like to note that it would have to be the most pro-colonial white couple ever that said, you know how we can become the heroes? Just leave these creatures be.
Yeah.
Just let them be.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. and Mrs. Beg. Okay. Here's how we finish it off with a flourish then. Because they've ruined these poor animals' lives. But maybe they won't be so trusting of humans. Which, hey, good for you animals, right? But what if so a lot of her contemporaries in the field where she's working are suddenly dead. So she's shunned by the archaeological community, right? She'd have to be, right? They fly to New York for his job, but he's been delayed by days and days. And he wasn't back by Christmas. And so he's shunned by the New York literate elite, who then don't allow him to have any work. They fall below the poverty line, can't find work. He's a personal trainer part-time, but he's still terrorized because of all of the PTSD from getting shot at with Molotov cocktails in the air, right? And she, not able to cope with him, falls into using morphine and other substances, trying to reconnect with these animals that she terribly abused. And now, like, they fall into disrepair. They fall deeper into, and they die in each other's arms in that very tent that they drug all the way across Africa. And it's a very large, comfortable tent, but it's where they remain, nameless, Middle America.
And aliens, thousands and millions of years from now, come back and say, so this was the great thing.
they like analyze their brain scanning for memories. Oh, they knew about the Brontosaurus. Okay, that brings me to my shocked moment. I don't know about you.
Well, I think that is the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So do we have any more Sean facts?
We have a third of our Sean facts to go.
Like, because I keep screaming. And I'm sorry. I'll stop soon.
So the ones that I've kept here are mostly from the legend of Mokale Mobembe. Mokale Mobembe.
We've butchered better, worse. You know what I mean?
Paleontologist Donald Prothero remarked that the quest for this legend is part of the effort by creationists to overthrow the theory of evolution and teaching of science by any means possible. Additionally, Prothero observes that the only people looking for the Mokele Mbembo are creationist ministers, not wildlife biologists. Anyone surprised by that? No? Okay. Me neither.
No.
I've seen enough Christian school homework to know, like, dinosaurs were in the Bible. And I'm like, well, but also, it's not really the point.
If we evolved from monkeys, why are monkeys still around?
Get over yourself.
The first description of the Mokele Mbembo as an apatosaurus-like creature was in 1909 in Beasts and Men, the autobiography of famed big game hunter Carl Hagenbeck. He claimed to have heard from two independent sources, gotta have at least two, about a creature living in Rhodesia, or modern-day Zimbabwe, which was described to them by natives as half elephant, half dragon. Tales of entities like Mokele Mbembe, living saurians walking around the African rainforest, are not rare. There have been multiple tales of large, smooth-skinned quadrupeds with long necks that fed on large prey still living in Central Africa. Another report comes from German captain Ludwig Freiherr von Stein zu Lausnitz.
Wow, say that again.
Ludwig Freiherr von Stein zu Lausnitz. Captain Ludwig Freiherr von Stein zu Lausnitz.
Liddy, do you want to say that back?
No.
Captain Ludwig von Stingning den Light Switch.
Light Switch.
Louis von Light Switch.
He's the best Koopa baby, the Koopa kid.
As described by Willie Lay in the book of Lungfish and the Unicorn in 1941, von Stein was ordered to conduct a survey of German colonies in what is now Cameroon in 1913. He heard stories of an enormous reptile called Mokele Mbembe, alleged to live in the jungles, and included a description in his official report. According to Lay, von Stein worded his report with utmost caution, knowing it might be seen as unbelievable. Nevertheless, von Stein thought the tales were credible. Trusted native guides had related the tales to him, and the stories were related to him by independent sources, yet featured many of the same details. In May 2013, the Norwegian experimental music outfit Sturle Dagsland released a song entitled Mokele Mbembe. That's another just random fact about this legend. Korean-American artist David Cho claimed on an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience that as a young man, he traveled to the Congo in search of Mokele Mbembe after reading about it in a magazine while he was living in Israel. The 2019 film Godzilla King of the Monsters mentions a titan dubbed Mokele Mbembe, though it is not seen in the film. The creature is featured more prominently in the film's novelization. And that is our end of Sean Facts.
So I have a bit of a theory. Can I go on a bit of a rant?
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't have time for rants now. I used all that time. No, go ahead.
So you know how, and like maybe this is not something that I've researched on. So this is just me putting, you know, one and three together and hoping it gets four. What if all the stories of dragons come from like large dinosaur bones that were unearthed when people were like digging up stuff and, you know, becoming more of an agricultural, they're like seeing this large bone and they're like, oh, that has to go to a dragon. Because the thing about dragon is the word dragon is kind of used interchangeably throughout different cultures. So what we would call a dragon would and what we would describe as a dragon in Western culture isn't what would be described as a dragon in Eastern, you know, Chinese culture.
Dinosaur means like what, giant lizard? So like.
Right. So like, what if all of these stories that are coming up where people are like, yeah, there are dinosaurs still among us. And these are all of the legends that come from it, or dragons and everything. What if they're just, they see these bones and they don't do carbon dating. They just assume that this is a dead bone.
Yeah. That's not unreasonable, Lydia.
Right. And it like we don't actually like to find like a complete skeleton is very, very rare. You know, if you just have this very large bone and it's bigger than the head of your horse and it looks like it's, you know, or like you see like this collection of a foot bone, of bones and a feet, and that's like bigger than your dog, then you're going to think this is a dragon.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was just, I mean, that's just something that I'm spitballing is like, you know, maybe that's where these stories of dragons come from.
I've heard similar theories. I think that's a very credible idea.
Right. And it would line up with agricultural because you're, you know, reworking the earth to fit your needs as like a farmer or a civilization.
Yeah. I'm super down. Hear, hear. Seconded.
So, do you want to talk about your shocked moment?
Mine's stupid and small if you want to start there.
Go for it.
White people. Shake my head. Just evil. If there were no white people in this film, there would be no problem. Yeah, sure. A couple people died. Eating Brontosaurus, right? Maybe as many as four people we see, right? But like people get food poisoning all the time, that happens. People die every day, sometimes by a cab that's distracted by a Brontosaurus figurine moving through town.
Oh no, it was just a local driver that was working for the production hit two girls. One of them died. Both of them native, I guess.
People be dying every day. I'm just saying. In this film, the Brontosaurus would have been fine. All of those militia people and the militia people didn't have really great prospects. I guess that's not a good, you know, eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we will die is their whole thing. But like, I think those indigenous people probably would have had long lived lives, you know. I can't stand the white savior thing these days. And this movie was very much like, and then the white people did good. And I'm like, nope. The white people were the problem the whole time.
Agreed.
Okay. That's my shocked moment. It's not.
Well, my shocked moment, because, like, I mean, it would be very obvious to talk about the white people in this movie.
Okay, thanks.
I know, but I don't want to, like, I don't just want to, like, you know, piggyback on that. I mean, like, I just kind of figured the jokes would have been better. Like, they tried. they tried to make the jokes funny, but they fall flat.
The only things I laughed at were things they did not mean to be funny.
I know. Yeah. So that's my shocked moment. It's short, too. No,
that's fine.
Yeah.
Just like it's like this movie, it was long-winded up until the end, and then it was just a cymbal crash, and we were done. Jen?
There just was not enough dinosaur in this dinosaur movie. I maybe that would have ballooned the budget past $14 million.
They already had the latex suit.
I mean, I imagine that, it only took 8 years to get from this to Jurassic Park.
Wow, that's impressive.
So I think that there were great advancements during that time. And I wonder, you know, maybe if, no, I'm just going to stick it with a shocked. I'm not going to say like, maybe this movie is the reason we have Jurassic Park. Like, you could totally not have this movie and Jurassic Park would have totally been made absolutely the same. No, this movie lacked inspiration and seemed just to take an idea of a legend and play off of it.
All right, grade your applaud on a scale of 1 to 5.
1,000.
Oh wow. Okay, you go last. What's your score?
Oh, it's not a really good applaud moment.
Ben, you can go right into it. Go ahead. I feel pretty good about mine. Not 1,000.
I just appreciated the score. I know it sounded a lot like other things that especially came out in the 80s, but, you know, especially as it escalated into the final scene, it seemed like that there was an appropriate amount of orchestral inspiration thrown in there and not just trying to rely, you know, heavily on the synth. There were some synth moments in there, if I remember.
It was the 80s.
Yeah. Can't get away from the synth, especially if you've got a star from synth. But yeah, the score is what I would say is probably the best thing out of this movie.
Okay, so the thing I applaud the most in this film is, and it's something that I guess now that we've done about a mazillion episodes of this show, right, I recognize that there are things that I do fall back on in terms of what I applaud and what I shock about stuff. Racist fools. I tend to be shocked by. Not shocked that they exist. I know they exist, but the fact that they're centered in a movie that I have to watch. Right? But my applaud moment for this film seems to be the genuine attempt to portray animals and people sincerely all around some pretty obvious latex beasts. I feel like there was an attempt made in a time when attempt was not often made to be thoughtful to the peoples in the film. I don't know if they consulted. I didn't see and I didn't observe the credits like scrupulously enough to like be able to like see if they had any kind of like cultural ambassador or whatever. But I feel like people weren't made fun of because of their culture. Right. There were a couple crappy tropes in there, like the whole flashing camera scaring them. That one tribe. But like in terms of like being human and being autonomous and making decisions for and about themselves and not being portrayed as either the victim or the dumb or, you know, like the folly to all of these white people's plans, they often made like really great decisions for and about themselves that like the white people would be like, why? Right. And it's like, well, because we see that you're a dumbass and we don't want to participate. Right. The eye roll, even though there weren't like exactly eye rolls a lot. I loved that about the people portrayed in this film. Also, I felt like they didn't as much as they it's funny. They anthropomorphized they made human inflection onto the brontosaurus. But the monkey just got to be a monkey, and the toucan just got to be a toucan, and the vultures were just being vultures, doing what vultures do, you know? And so I felt like it was authentic in a way, which is what makes all of the white people so infuriating, because everything else was harmonious. It was like, I don't know, like the white guys were a bad carrot in a good soup.
Right, like
I'm always making food metaphors, Lydia. I'm so sorry.
The best jokes for me were the ones that were done by the African actors.
Uh-huh.
Then they were the ones who sold it for me as far as acting goes.
Yes.
My plot moment is mom herbivore turns carnivorous. I love that for her. I really do love that for her. She's like went full kaiju in that battle at the end. Yes. She just rampaged through the entire camp. It was the best part. Literally. I remember watching this last night. And like as soon as like I was like, yeah, mom, get up. Yeah, go get him. Go get him. And then she yanks him. And I'm just like, yes, destroy the one who hurt your child.
What's that phrase from Love, not Love Boat, that show Jen and I sometimes watch garbage shows on purpose. It was like the Love Cruise or the yacht show where they like take rich people around and they have like a cabin crew and the whole show.
Below Deck.
Okay. So dear friend of the show, Sarai, she told me to watch the show because she was currently binging it. Right. And so I watched like the first season with Jen and somebody says something along the lines is, I love that journey for you. But I'm going to do something else, right? You remember it better than I do.
Oh, it was actually Too Hot to Handle.
Yeah, okay, so sometimes we pick a garbage show to watch, and Jen and I were watching Too Hot to Handle because I was cruising around like Netflix one night, and I just was like, oh, that looks like garbage. Okay, awesome. And what's the phrase?
I want to empower you for that.
That's it. That's you and the cracked out mom dinosaur. I want to empower you for that. Sorry for interrupting.
No, I was pretty much done. Just, you know, herbivore mom is like, nope, full carnivorous. I gotta be full carnivorous. Yeah.
Beautiful. Gorgeous.
Just like our plotters as they made it through June.
June, did you get out of school? Good for you. Are you like just about to have your like summer plans take off? Did your cat walk across your keyboard at the end of your podcast and you're afraid it's all deleted now? It's fine. It's fine?
It's fine.
Okay, good. So,
If you want to continue listening to Shocked and Applaud next month, the best way to find us and continue to find us is at shockedandapplaud.com, which will give you links to subscribe to us on wherever you find your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podchaser.com, lots of great places. And you can also reach out to us on social media at ShockedApplaud on Instagram and Twitter, and at ShockedAndApplaud on Facebook.
Yeah. hey, Vern, if you only heard this part, thanks for being awesome. Have a happy 200th episode. Woo-woo.
Have a happy 200th episode to you, Vern.
Happy 200!
Okay.
At Cinema Recall.
Until next time, this is Lydia Malcolm.
This is Jen McQuaid.
And I'm Naomi McQuaid, and this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
What a journey we've had together, Applauder. Thank you for listening to part 3 of our walkthrough of 1985's Baby, Secret of the Lost Legend. We hope you've enjoyed the journey through Sean Facts, our scene-by-scene analysis, as well as our shocked and applaudable moments. If you're looking for other great film and television discussion podcasts, we've got you covered. Jeff vs. The World is the home of Bad Meaning Bad or Bad Meaning Good, where Jeff and a group of podcasters come together and tackle bad movies. And Real Feels Podcast reviews the world of film one movie genre at a time, with plenty of laughs and trivia. You can get links to these amazing shows from this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and... not the mama! Jen! You know what else I haven't had to be lately? Your editor! Thank you so much, Lydia, for helping prepare these month-long episodes for several months now, including this one. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll be back Tuesday, July 5th, with a brand new episode. And we have an extra special surprise for you next month that you won't want to miss. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
So, also, just, I guess, since we're talking about cats, there was a cats reference in the Chip and Dale movie that came out on Disney Plus. So they enter into a street that's called the Uncanny Valley. And inside of there, some of the cats, the angelical cats, are fighting over some scrap.
Angelical cats or jellical cats?
I guess it is.
They do
invoke the fear and terror of angels from the Old Testament.
Okay, yeah, but I was just now thinking, I was like, why did you try to make that cat reference? You should have let Lydia make that reference. And I was like, just corrected it. I'm like, that's why you should have let Lydia make the freaking reference. God help. Okay.